So the session we're going to talk about today is manage and control your application with Azure Resource Manager. So I'm Mike Chen, and here I have Graf with me. So we are both program managers in Azure Resource Manager team.
So just a quick show of hands, how many people are aware of Azure Resource Manager or actively using it? Great. How many of you understand RBAC and are using it in our day-to-day? Cool, nice chunk. And what about policy? Cool, so we-
Even better.
I'm sure this session will be useful to you because we'll talk a lot about policy and RBAC and how you control access to applications in the cloud. So yeah, Mike, go ahead.
So we'll start by looking at the challenges we observed when we helped organizations transition from traditional mode to agile mode. So by traditional mode, it means slower speed and also longer projects. By agile mode, is faster response to business changes. So these are the challenges are the top challenges we have seen. So the first one is visibility of the cloud assets. So you have many resources in your Azure repository. I know it's like you just say a list, it's arbitrarily named, and you don't know who is using it, what they are used for, who is paying for those resources. And the next one is about granular access control. So you want to set right permission to the right people so they can work effectively and as well as work securely. So they don't break your system by mistake. Next one is about cost control. So how many times you have seen unexpected cost from your bill? And then later you find, some unexpected resources is just there, idle, and burning your money, like a DS15 VM left for a month. So it's about like $1,000. So organizations want to have some way to do cost control. And the next one, very important, is about service catalog. You want to have some control on what type of resources your organization can use. So Azure have all kinds of resource types from VM to XD Insights to all the marketplace solutions. But for your organization, only a few of them make sense for you to use. So you want to have an approved list so that your user do not arbitrarily use any resource types. Last but not the least is about the geo compliance. For bigger enterprises like banks, they usually have the geo compliance requirements. All my data must be in certain geo boundaries. So these are the challenges we have seen organizations have. And then today's session will focus on the ways that provided in Azure Resource Manager to address these issues. So I'll first talk about how do you organize your resources. And then Gaurav will talk about how do you manage access control. And then I'll take it back and talk about IT policies. So we'll probably spend most of the time on policy because I see the hands raised. So not a lot of people are aware of this new feature. OK, so let's get started by organizing your resources. So we'll talk about the basic concepts you can use to organize your resources and a few best practices here. So an application may have compute, network, storage, those are the core resources, and also may have databases, web apps, RAM books, and alert rules like instruments. So when you get a lot of applications, your view when you go to the portal looks like this. So it's a list with 1,000 items, so you hardly know what are those for. Each name seems to be arbitrarily named. From the icon, there are storage account, there are network card, there are virtual network, all kinds of things. But you have no idea what they are for. So you will prefer to see a view with fewer items. And this is where you want to use resource group to group your resources logically. So here in the view, you can see I only have from 1,000 to 5 items. So that's much clearer view for me to see. And then from the name, I can say, oh, this is Contoso app 1, this is CRM, this is my demo app. So it's very clear when you have fewer items to manage. So now let's take a look at what a resource group is. So who do you think you guys are expert on resource group? Oh, no? Oh, that surprised me a little bit. So resource group is a folder. Think of this as a shared folder with a lot of files. So it's basically a folder of resources with same life cycle. And it stands for a unit of deployment. So we'll double click on that. What does that mean? And it's also unit of access control. And resources in resource group can span regions and can span services. So this is the resource group payload when you do a creation of resource group. So it has a resource group name. It has two properties. One is location, and the other is tags. So tags are optional. Location is mandatory. Since I just mentioned resources in resource group can span regions, why do you think we need a location here? So the answer, there are two means. One is for geo-compliance. So once you determine the location of a resource group, all the metadata about your deployment, about your resources, actually goes to that region. So that means when you do a put request to do a deployment, it will go to that endpoint so that your data, your deployment data, are living that geo boundary. And also for high availability, we also replicate the data to a pair region in the same geo boundary. So that's what the location is. Now let's talk about two patterns we usually see customers are doing about how they group their resources. So the first one is about per application, per resource group. Those are usually for simple applications. You maybe have a website, have a database. They're always updated and managed by the same set of people and updated together. So from the diagram you see below, so there are four O's. So each one stands for a resource group, and you are placing application 1 to application 4 to different resource groups. So this is simple pattern. When you have more complex application, so those applications tend to have different tiers. Maybe they have a front-end tier, they have a back-end tier, they have a database tier, they may have a network, shared network infrastructure as well. So in this case, you want to group your tier of application into a resource group. And then because they are always updated independently with each other, they can also be managed by a different set of people. And the way they interact with each other is the resources in one resource group one will interact with resources in other resource groups. So here in the diagram, you can see there are application layers. There are app 1, 2, 3. And there's also the shared infrastructure that's set up by the central IT team. So those tend to be like either shared network that has express route config to the corpnet, or they can be a shared database pool that managed by the DB admins. And the business group, usually, they manage their own apps. So that's the most typical pattern we see how people use resource groups. So now let's double click on resource group as units of deployment. So what does that mean? So we all know templates deploy resources into one resource group. And when you deploy the resource, there are actually two modes you can use. One is called complete mode, the other is called incremental mode. So the key difference is that when you do a complete mode, when you do the deployment, they will remove the resources that are not mentioned in this template. So that means your template fully defines this resource group. So let me give you an example why this is useful. Imagine you have an application, and in your template, you have a parameter says like number of VMs. So you use this parameter as a way to scale your application when there's different traffic. So one day you want to scale in the application, you want to reduce the number of VMs. So when you do the full complete deployment mode, all the non-referenced resources will be deleted, then you end up with fewer VMs. But if you use the incremental ones, they won't touch the existing VMs. So that's why you want to use the complete mode in this case. So when you use complete mode, it fully defines your resource group. And then they have the one-on-one mapping. So that's very typical pattern we see and we recommend to use about when you think about how do you want to organize your resources. So you want to organize by resource groups and by templates. The other way to look at this is resource group can be exported as templates. So when you have a resource group have existing resources, but you haven't started to use templates yet, you can do an export, then you end up with a template with a description of all the resources in that resource group. And then when you see there are unreferenced one resources, that basically means they are irrelevant to your application, or they can be updated independently. So a lot of times, it makes sense to separate this resource with the rest of them. And then once you have full Bluent template that defines your environment for the resource group, then you can deploy the template to other resource groups. So you can easily reprovision your entire system. So the view I previously showed you, when we look at the resources, there are many. And then by using resource group, we reduce it down to a few. But when you have more complex organization structure, you have more applications, the view gets longer. So you get back to the same problem where you cannot easily tell what this application are used for just by name. This is where you will need tags. So you want to tag your resources or your resource groups when you have more applications. So think of tags as your metadata store. So you can have environment, you can have your role of application, you can have your application name, like department, like indicating who is paying for this, and also the responsible party, like who is actually using this resource and managing this resource. And the tags sometimes are critical when you want to integrate with third-party management solution, because they depend on certain things like call center, you know, for billing, your org ID for, you know, just to have this management solution work. So one thing MSA IT uses ServiceNow. So they are looking at org ID, they're looking at application name, they're looking at call center to make sure Azure becomes single source of truth for the metadata, and then the third-party management solution will depend on that. So when you have tags, so the portal can look like this. So in the column selector, you can actually include those tags. So very easily, you can see, oh, which are the call center for this application? What is the application? What is their environment? So here, I have previously, I just have Contoso App 1, 2, CRM Prod. Those are just simple words. But when you add tags, you can see whether which one is production, which one is just for testing, what is the application does. And you can also add who is manage the solution, so you know who to contact when there is a problem. So now let me do a very quick demo on export resource group and how do you set tags. So this is the view I previously showed you about. There are many resources. It's so hard to recognize them. And then when you have resource group, let me filter just by my demo subscription. It will look like this. So you have call center, you have environments, you have application, and the most important thing, you have few items to manage. And if you go to one of them, and here's the tag option. So let's click on that. So you can see tags is basically a key value pair here. Here I have three tags. And if you want to add a tag, you can select from the drop-down. Say that's created by, and then you give it a value. So this one created by Mike. And then it will add a text. And when you go to this tab, you can see this key and value. So they are sharing a subscription-wide taxonomy. So all the existing tags will show up here for you to select. So it makes it easier. And now let's look at how to export a resource group. So if you go to the automation script here, what it does is it looks at all the resources in the resource group. Here I just have one. So it will generate a template using the latest schema. So here I have a storage account. And then you will basically have predefined parameters there. And then you, for most of the time, you may want to edit this template a little bit to make sure it's usable. You want to have the right set of parameter you can set. So these are the demos for this. So now we all know tags and resource group are great. And the another important thing is, you know, tags are great. But if nobody uses tags when they create the resources, then you cannot basically generate that view. You cannot integrate with third-party solutions easily. So there are certain things that help you to enforce the tag. So first thing is you want to set tags in approved templates. So that means in your template, when people deploy, you have those values as parameters. And those parameters will contribute to the tags in different resources. The other way you can do it is you want to have the admin set tags at resource group level. So the contributor in that resource group can actually not change the tags. They can, when you look at the resources, because it's nested under the resource group, you will know what these resources are for. And the next three is about using policies to enforce tags. So we have a deny policy that do force enforcement. So it will actually deny the request when there's no tags. And there's also the audit policy that will actually make your resource creation pass through, but it will audit the resources that miss the tags. And we also have the append tag solution to append default value for tags.
And don't worry, we'll talk about like all these three in the policy section in more detail. So if you're not able to follow, we'll cover these in more detail.
Yeah, we'll show examples about and demos about these three. I think the key takeaway here is you want to organize your resources by resource group and by tagging them correctly. And also you want to leverage template to define your resource group. And also you want to have ways to enforce your tags to make sure your tag is properly aligned. So that's about organize. Now I'm just handing over to Graf to talk about manage access control.
Okay, so access control. What we'll cover here in this section are three things which Azure Resource Manager provides you to manage, to control access to your resources in Azure. The first one is a role-based access control. It is a very common concept used across Office 365, Dynamics CRM, Azure. So it is the same principles of Azure Active Directory that are applicable in Azure Resource Manager, so there is no new concept that you'll have to learn to get this. Then we'll talk a little bit about audits and how IT admins can use activity logs to do some auditing of events that are happening when people are using and deploying applications in Azure. And then we'll cover resource policy. So role-based access control, what it allows you to do is it allows you to give, like manage granular access to Azure or to the resources that are deployed in Azure. It is assignable to individual users or user groups that you have created in your Active Directory, or to service principals, which are essentially like applications running on your behalf. So you can assign these role-based access control rules to each of these segments. It is a default deny system, and what that means is, by default, a user will not have permission to do certain actions unless you grant him that access. And we'll take an example and understand how that works. But there are two main roles that are supported. The first segment is a built-in roles, which Azure provides you by default. This could be the owner, the reader, the contributor. These were the ones we started off with, and now the list has grown to around like 40 built-in roles. And then the second set is the custom roles. So built-in roles provide you or have functionality division based on your duties in your organization. Say, for example, database admin. So there will be a role for the duties that a database admin needs to perform, or there will be a role for a virtual machine operator. So that role will have permissions that a virtual machine operator needs to have in order to do his duty on a day-to-day basis. So these are the roles that you can use to segregate duties within your organization. But then, if you want some more flexibility in terms of, you know, these built-in roles to not meet certain needs, then you have custom roles, which you can create for your needs. There are two key concepts in, it's very simple. There are two key concepts in RBAC. First is the role definitions. What that means is you are defining a set of permissions that you want to grant to any entity, the three entities that we talked about, a user group, or a service principal. So what are the set of permissions? And the permissions are composed of three things. What is my resource provider? Like, is it Microsoft.compute or is it Microsoft.storage? So that's my resource provider. Under that resource provider, what resource type do I want to grant permission to? So it could be, in case of Microsoft.storage, it could be a storage account. In case of Microsoft.network, it could be a virtual network. And the third main piece is the action. Like, what action do you want to allow to that piece of resource? Do you want a read action or do you want a write action? So these three pieces compose your role definition. And then role assignments is something which is kind of it ties your role definition to the entity where you want to apply those permissions. So it's a bridge between the role definition and the scope where or the entity you are wanting to apply that role definition to. So in this example, for a role assignment, a simple statement like Jim is a storage account contributor on the storage account Contoso Storage East. So Jim is a user. So we talked about three entities. User is an entity. So Jim is a user. He wants to be a storage account contributor, which is the role definition. And then he wants to have that permission on a specific storage account, in this case, Contoso Storage East. So this is like a literal mapping between the principal to a role definition on a particular resource. The inheritance of role assignments follow in this hierarchy. So you have the subscriptions at the very top, then you have resource groups under your subscription, and then you have resources under your resource groups. So if a user, Jim, has read permission to your subscription, he will have read permission to all the resource groups under your subscription. So the access and inheritance flows. If you have assigned permission at the top scope, the permissions will flow to all the way to the bottom of the stack. Similarly, if you give someone an owner access on your resource group, he will have owner access for all the resources under your resource group. So there is no explicit deny. So if you want to grant permissions to a specific user to only certain resources in a particular resource group, you have to go and explicitly grant access or allow access to each of those resources and not grant access to the ones you don't need to. So there is no deny capability here. You have to explicitly grant access. And this is a common IT scenario, and Mike touched a little bit upon it. So this is a graphical representation, a very common theme we have seen in organizations. You have a central IT team, which owns your Azure subscriptions, which manages your Azure subscription, which is responsible for compliance, security, and whatnot. Underneath that central IT team is like the network admins, which are responsible for the standard or the shared resources that people can use, like the virtual networks in your organizations or the express route circuits. So there are these network admin groups who own these shared resources. And then underneath it, there could be resource groups. So underneath it, there could be project teams working on different projects or different applications. So in the boxes on the right, you can see like there is a subscription per sector box. In that, you have sectors. Each sector might have regions. Then each region will have divisions in your company. Like, you know, there will be a marketing division, a sales division, and whatnot. And then each division, there will be people working on projects for that division. So keeping that hierarchy in mind, how do you, through RBAC, control access or make sure that only the people who need access to a certain resource get that access and no one else gets that access? So we'll keep the scenario in mind, and we will look at examples on how you can do it through the course of the section. So I touched a little bit upon custom roles and built-in roles. This is a slide which, you know, kind of, again, tells you in detail what a built-in role is. As I said, there are like around 40 plus roles now that, and I'll show you quickly on the portal, but there's a rich set of roles that you can just go and select from and start using. You don't have to do anything. That's a rich set. And then each built-in role is assignable to these three entities that we talked about earlier, users, groups, or service principals. These built-in roles, you know, they cannot be modified. If there is a role and you want to add a specific permission or action, you cannot do that. For that, you'll have to create your own custom role, and we'll look at that also. The top used built-in roles, you know, obviously the reader contributor owner were there from long time, but we have added a few new ones. So virtual machine contributor and a database contributor are like one of the top roles that are getting used by people in their organizations. So we talked about actions, and when I was talking about role definition, I was talking about how you construct the permission set. And this is an example which shows you, for a storage account contributor role, what actions or what permissions does that role have? So I talked about three key components, right? First is the resource provider. So in this case, Microsoft.storage. Resource type is storage accounts. And then it supports wildcards. So a star at the very end means it has all the permissions, which means that if you grant someone this particular access, it will be able to create and manage storage accounts at the scope that you grant access to, whether be it subscription or resource group. And then it has like a bunch of other roles that it has access to. So with that, let me go to the portal and show you what we recently added. So these are my resource groups that I have kind of pinned here. I'll go to one of these. Let me go to this one. So remember the scenario I showed earlier, where we had like the central IT team, the network admins, and the project owners. So this, I've created a resource group for people working on, say, for example, Contoso application in an organization, right? So I've created a resource group for that particular application where the resources specific to that particular application will live in. Now, I want only people working on that project to be able to create resources in this resource group or manage resources in this resource group. So how will I do that? So I come here, I already have this resource group created, so I don't need to create it again. But if you don't have, you'll have to create a specific resource group for an application that you want to use. And then in here, this is a new tab we have added, Access Control, IAM. There used to be, if you used it in the past, there used to be like people showing up in some other blade, like an icon showing people. We have made that experience better, and we have integrated it here. So this is the way you can add roles or grant access to people those roles. So in here, I will go to Add, and I will select a role that I want to grant access. In this case, I want contributor access to people who are working on this project. And then I want to select the user group. So I've already created a user group It's an Active Directory user group, which people working on that project will join. So there you go. I've given that user group contributor access to the resource group I want them to be able to contribute to. So it's as simple as that. Similarly, if I wanted to have the network admins access to the shared resources and only the network admins have access to the shared resources, I will create a separate resource group. In this case, I've created Ignite standard resources. In this resource group, I will create my standard virtual networks and all the shared resources. And then I will have a similar user group for my network admins at a higher level, and only those guys will have owner access to this. The other user group I created, which was for the project or application specific, that user group will only have reader access to this particular resource group so that they can view the virtual networks that they can use, but they cannot create or update any of the standard resources because the central IT team wants to manage those. Okay. So, okay, I wanted to show you the built-in roles and the definition for one of the built-in roles. So let me go back to the resource group and go back to the same blade and click on roles. So this will give me all the built-in roles plus any custom roles that I have created for the subscription for me to use and assign to different people. So in here, you can see like the owner, reader, contributor roles. But let's open one of the more interesting ones. Let's open the virtual machine contributor role. And then you can see what permissions this role has. So in this view, you can see that it has permissions to these different resource providers. It has partial permissions to these different resource providers. So let's see, what partial permissions does it have? So there you can see, you know, for virtual machines in here, it can do anything for the virtual machines, but for some of the other resources, like availability sets, or the disk, it does not have permission. So this is a good graphical view of how you can, you know, kind of look at different roles, built-in roles or custom roles, and see, understand what permissions each role has. Okay, so the next section we'll talk about custom roles and how you can create a custom role, and how it gives you more flexibility to suit your needs. Same concepts apply to custom roles also, where it can be assigned to user groups or service principals at different scopes, scopes meaning subscription, resource group, or resources. And then it can be shared across multiple subscriptions in the same tenant. In terms of who can create or update these roles, someone needs to have the read permission for Microsoft.authorization/role definition to be able to view the role, and he needs to have this for the same resource, the right permission to be able to create and update the role. So typically, owners of subscription or resource groups have that permission at that scope. So let's jump right into the demo and see how you can create a custom role. So custom role definition is a JSON file, right? So you don't want, if you're good at JSON, yes, you can do it, but you don't want to start from scratch. So how do we go about doing it? So you already have in your mind what capabilities you want to assign to that role. Think about one of the built-in roles that is closest, that matches closest to that particular role that you want to create, and get the role definition of that built-in role. So this first statement, why is the screen not getting shared?
Close this one. Yes.
There you go. Okay. So you get the role definition for the virtual machine contributor role. We just saw the virtual machine contributor role on the portal. You get the role definition by name for that role. I want to get the JSON file for that, so I will pipe the output of this to a statement, to a command, let convert to JSON, which will give me the JSON representation of that role. And then I want to save it as a file, so I use the out file and save it as a file, a JSON file. So let's run this. I can quickly open the file. Okay, here you go. So virtual machine contributor, we already saw these permissions, but now what I want to do is I want to create a role which can restart or start virtual machines but not create or delete them. So I want people to be able to restart machines, start machines, but not create or update those. So if I look at the action set, so let's start with this role and start modifying it. So I'll change the name. Virtual machine, let's call it custom ignite role. I don't need the ID or the next two sections for that. I'll change the description. Allows to restart or start VMs. Now, I look at the next section. It has microsoft.compute.virtualmachines. I don't want to grant any of these permissions. I only want to grant the read permission for any compute resources. So I'll do this, and I'll do read. So any compute resources, I'll grant a read permission. And similarly, I will go and start modifying everything else. Like for insights, I want them to be able to create insight rules, so I'll still have the same permission. Microsoft.network, I'll do the same thing as compute. I only want them to be able to read the network resources. So I'll do the same thing. Any Microsoft.virtual network resource, you do a read, and you get the idea. But now I want to add the start and restart permissions. So how do I know which action corresponds to start and restart? So I go back to PowerShell, and I run this next commandlet, which gives me the provider operations for any type of resource. And I search for the resource microsoft.compute/virtualmachines because the permission I want to grant is for a virtual machines provider. So I run this, and it will give me all the permissions that I can use. So in this case, I want to use this particular one, microsoft.compute/virtualmachines/start-that-action. So I'll copy this from here and add it to the JSON that I was appending. Right? So, and then I will do the similar thing for restart. I'll get the corresponding string for restart, and I will come back and add it here. So, and then if I want to change the scope, say, for example, I want it to be applicable at only a particular subscription. So I will come here and say subscriptions/the ID of the subscription. So this is how I have created a new custom role to suit my needs. I already have one pre-created, so I'll use that. So now I have my JSON file is created. So I'll come here, and to create a new role definition, it needs an input file, which is the JSON file we just created. So I'll run this, pass in that file, and this role will be created for me. Because it already exists, so I'll have to change the name and create the file. But then the next step is I want to have that role applied to a particular resource group that I created, because I want people in this people in a particular resource group access to the permissions I created in this custom role. So I will go here and apply that role. Oops. So in this case, I am giving Mike access to the resource group I created just now, the Ignite Contoso resource group, and giving him the virtual machine Ignite custom role. And then I'm passing in that role definition. And it cannot find it. Oh, did I give the right file name? Anyway, so let's not debug it here, but I could use the new Azure RM role assignment to apply that role definition I created to that user, in this case, Mike. So let's switch back to the slides, which I closed. So we talked about this. We talked about how you can create custom roles. So this is the role definition we created, the role assignment, and this is the audit history. So the audit history, so all these events that are happening as part of RBAC, they are getting audited. So you can go to the portal and take a look at those activities that are happening. So this is like some of the key learnings from enterprise customers around RBAC, and they want to use like org accounts and not live IDs, which is like, yeah, we all understand that. You want to assign these scopes or the permissions you create at resource group level and not at the subscription level. If you assign at the subscription level, it's not a good practice. And then, yeah, you only assign the least privilege, the least set of permissions that someone needs to be able to perform some action. Cool, so now we'll talk about resource policy because that's where we want to spend most of our time. So I'll switch head, give it back to Mike.
Okay, thank you, Greg. Okay, so now let's talk about the mysterious Azure resource policy that nobody knows. So this is a new feature we GA'd in April this year, but we haven't talked about this in big customer events. So what is resource policy? So it is a customer role you can define that governs your resource configuration. Previously, Graf talked about the RBAC. It allows you to define who has permission to do what, but here is define what of the what is that. So you want to define what the resource should look like when you create those resources or update it. And based on the rule, the policy can deny or audit or append to your request. So we'll talk about the difference later on. And then you can also monitor policy-related events. So we'll start by look at what does our customer need. So customers need granular control over Azure resources for different aspects. So they want it for access management, which we talk about to give you visibility into your cloud assets. They also want to control the geo compliance. They also want to have certain ways to control the cost. They also want to ensure security best practices and configuration best practices. And they want this policy system has seamless integration with the rest part of the system. So these are the highlights from some of our customer interviews. So one of them is unexpected bill is caused by a large VM sitting idle forever. So that's the $1,000 example I was using. And the other interesting one is we have a dev machine in the production environment which has a public IP and someone can easily get to it and get to our production data. So that's for security. So now we first look at who interacts with policy. So there are two set of users. One is the admins who manage the policy, who defines what the policy is, and then assign the policy to different scope. And those are usually the subscription owners, resource group owners, or anybody technically who have permission to do policy definition and policy assignment. And the next set of users is the IT end IT user. So they are creating the resources. They usually be the owner of the resource group. They can also be the contributor and whoever who has right permission to the resources. And when there's a policy, when you do a pull request or patch request trying to create or modify the resource, then it will trigger the policy evaluation. And there are two recommended customer roles when you use policy. One is called resource owner, the other is called policy owner. So resource owner is the owner minus the permission to do policies, because you don't want them to have the permission to delete your policy so that you cannot do enforcement. And the other is policy owners who can do policies plus the resources. So depending on your needs, you can do only policy or policy plus resources. Now let's take a look at how to define a policy. So it's also a JSON file. So it's pretty simple format. So it seems we like JSON files a lot, right? So it starts with the if and end with the then. So in the if section, you want to specify a condition or an operator that defines your rule, that describes what configuration specific configuration you're looking for. And then in the effect, you want to specify whether you want to deny the request, which means when the request comes through, when the evaluation is finishes and the conditions are met, it will fail the request. It doesn't even allow you to create the resource. Next one is about audit. So it will let you successful, but you will have a special type of policy event to indicate, hey, this resource that is not compliant with my policy. So you can get it from the activity logs. The last one is a pen. So sometimes you have default settings, but not everybody will use it. So in this case, you want to say, oh, if this setting doesn't exist when they create a resource, you want to append that setting. So that's for default configuration. So let's take a look at how to write a condition section. So a resource in Azure Resource Manager looks like this. It has an ID. It has a resource type. It has some common attributes like name, location, text, kind, SKU, which are the properties that Azure Resource Manager have for every resource providers. And there's also the RP properties in the properties bag. So basically, you can write a condition to control any of them. So assuming now you have a policy that defines everything, it's important to notice that a policy definition is only a template. So to make it effective, you have to assign it to a particular scope. The scope can be subscription, resource group, or the resources. So we say most commonly people are using subscription, and then it's the resource group, depending on whether you want to do macro-management or macro-management. And it also has a similar inheritance for policy. So now you have the assignment, you have the policy. Let's take a look at when does the evaluation happen. So when your end user creates a resource, it actually generates a put or patch request when he tries to create or modify the resource. So you give us the resource scope and the RP namespace, resource type, resource name in the URI. And then you give us a JSON payload. And the policy will be evaluated if an assignment is in place at a scope and above. That's the inheritance. So the request comes. We'll look at all the policies assigned in that particular scope. And then we'll evaluate one policy by policy. So we'll evaluate policy one, it doesn't meet, and then we look at policy two, all the conditions meet. And then if you have a denied policy, that's where the policy will fail your request. Then what happens after the policy evaluation? So an audit event will be generated for policy evaluation result. So it includes who is the caller of the original request and also the event details. And the most important thing is what policies are failing your request. So imagine with this information, you can tell the end user, you know, when they see a failure, they can say, oh, I'm violating policy X. And then when I can go to the look at what is policy X. And then a request may be blocked or modified, depends on the effect you specified. And you can also generate an alert that has an email notification, or it has a RAM book, it has a SMS, text messages to your phone. So now let's look at the real examples of policy definitions. So I'll go over location policy, tag policy, approved services. You know, you want to control the service catalog, and also naming conventions, approved SKUs, images. This one. So this is a JSON file. This is the probably the simplest one. So who can tell me what does this mean? This one? Yeah, exactly. So it's very easily to understand. If the location is not in North Europe or West Europe, then you want to deny it. So here, you see the field is mostly common use. We support fields for like location, name, kind, SKU, and also alias. Alias is the way we want to expose RP-specific properties, which I'll talk about later. So then here, I specify a deny policy, which means it will actually fail the request if the resource is not created in these two locations. So that's how you do geo-compliance. So we previously mentioned you want to enforce tags, and policy is the way to go. So there are a couple of ways. So the first one is you can have a deny policy to specify here, if you look at the field, it's called the text.callCenter, not in these three values, then it will deny the request. So that means when you create a resource, if you don't have this tag, or you don't have these values for the tags, it will fail the request. So some people, when they adopt this policy, they think it's just too much restrictions because my users haven't get used to specify tags in their deployment. So we have another way for append tags. So this requires you to know the default tags you want to have. So here, if you look at the condition, there's an operator called OLOF. Basically, it's combining, you know, it's an AND condition for the two subconditions there. So it basically says, if you have tags, but your tags doesn't have call center, then I want to append some details. And the details is an object. It's, the field is text.callCenter, and the value is my department. So this requires you to, usually you want to assign this to a mostly particular resource group, because you know when you create a resource group, what are the organizations are using, what are the call center it is used for. OK, so the next one is about naming convention. Similarly, we support name for field. And the like is a comparator. You can use a wildcard so that you can specify a name prefix and your name suffix. That makes, if you go back to the view, if you have this type of policy, then your view is more descriptive. So this is the service catalog policy. We have many resources, and then you want to have the ability to control what type of resources you can use. So we support tab as a field, and you can do Microsoft.resources/ wildcard, then that means everything under macro resources. And you can also be specific, is you have a field equals to like Microsoft compute virtual machines. And then next one is about use approved skills. So here, you actually have two conditions you have to meet. One is about the resource type. So that specifies if the type is storage account, but the field of the skill. So here you look at the field I highlighted. It's called Microsoft.storage, storage account, skill.name. So that's a property alias. So I'll talk about what is a property alias shortly. But this is the way you specify how do you want to control the skill. So in the skill name, you can have standard LRS, standard GRS. If it doesn't meet the requirements, you are denied the request. And similarly for images, here we use image.publisher, image.offer, image.skill to identify what images are allowed. Okay, so let's talk about aliases. So there are two things aliases are designed for. One is for us Microsoft to control what properties you can use, because there are so many properties in the properties bag for different type of resources. It doesn't make sense to expose all of them before you test it well, right? So we look at the customer requirements, we expose the most common ones, and then we make a more friendly name to it instead of the JSON path. It's also a way for us to, you may have noticed in the policy, you don't have API versions, right? Your different API versions have different type of schema. So properties one in API version one doesn't mean property one in API version two. But most time it means the same thing. So we created the alias to kind of bridge the properties from different API versions. So you only use aliases to point to the properties instead of using API version X, API version Y. So these are the knobs you can currently do to control the policies. So you can find more documentation from our online documentation. So specifically, we have skill support for most resource types. And then we support images for compute. We support SSL port for Microsoft Cache. We support like SQL version, SQL short count, a lot of them. And this is a screenshot of for policy events. So when you modify or you create the policy, we record this type of activity. So you know at a given time who creates that policy, when is the policy started to be effective. And also when you do the policy evaluation, you look at the screenshot on the right. So you actually have properties there. So it will tell you what are the policy that fill your request. So now we're going to do some policy demos.
So the policies that Mike talked about, let's take a quick look first at how you can create a policy. So here I have Visual Studio Code. I have a file. I've created a file. It's empty right now. So let me start with creating the location policy that Mike talked about. So I want to restrict people only create resources in specific regions and not any other region. So JSON file, I open with a curly bracket. Okay, so it's giving me IntelliSense. It's prompting me to tell me what my options are, so okay, I'll go with it. In this case, it's asking me to provide the schema where that policy is defined, the policy schema is defined. So I happen to know that, and that is a standard thing, so once you know it, you will remember it. Policy schema, right? So next, as I start type the codes, it's giving me more IntelliSense. Okay, now I have the option of choosing if, then, yes, I want an if condition. Okay, let's go with that. Comma. Oh, I have an extra quote. That's weird.
I have a comma there.
Oh, I missed a comma over here. Okay, there you go. Right, so I need an if condition that Mike talked about. Now, what else do I need? Okay, I have these options. Okay, I probably need the not operator because I want to disallow any other location that is not part of the set I want them to use. And then, if location not in, I need a field. So as I type, okay, there you go. So if my field is not the field I want to use in this case is location, right? And then I want to say if location is, and I have an extra brace somewhere. Okay, if my field location is not in, right? So I use the in, which gives me an array object. So I will write the locations that I want to specify. So West US, comma, East US. So I'll define all the locations that I want to allow. The idea is it's not difficult because it's giving you good intelligence. So to construct these policies is not difficult. I've created this location policy. The last thing in here is I want to specify an effect. If this, then what do you want to do? If this condition is met, then what do you want to do?
Missing a comma.
Comma, yeah, commas. Right? Then what? Okay, then effect. So it's giving me the effects I want. In this case, I want the deny effect. So I'll use the deny effect, but the other options are append or audit. So here I've created the location policy. Then how do you use this policy? Right? So in here, the JSON I constructed, I will use it in this to create the policy definition. So my first command creates a policy definition, stores it in the policy object, so I'll run it. Right, it's created the policy object. Next, I want to assign that. So two steps, you have to define the policy and then you assign it. So the next step is you make the policy assignment. The name of the policy is location policy. The scope I want to assign it at is the resource group scope, this particular resource group. And then the policy definition is the above object that I just created. So I'll run the statement to create that policy assignment for me. Right, so it's created that policy assignment for me. So this policy assignment has been done. Now the next step is I want to try it. So this policy is for any resource that gets deployed outside of this region, outside of the regions I defined, should be disallowed. So in here I'm using a template, I'm trying to create a storage account. And let me quickly open the template. Storage account. And in here, you can see it's a very simple storage account template, but you can see the location I specify here is a central US. It is one of the disallowed locations. So let's see what happens when I run this template. Okay, it failed. Let's see why it failed. So it's clearly stating here, if it allows me to highlight, that this particular type of resource failed with the following error message, and the error code is request disallowed by policy. The resource action microsoft.storage/storage/accounts write is disallowed by one or more policies, and the policy is my location policy. So if I quickly go to the portal and the logs that Mike was talking about, I can see the same logs over there. So I'll go to the resource group, my location policy resource group. And there's a deployment that failed. And it failed because of the policy violation. And if I click on the details, so the same error message it's giving me here. So this is the audit logs about policy that we talked about. I think we are under 10 minutes left, so do you want to open for questions or? Okay, actually, let me also quickly show you the append policy. Let's just show the script and the policy. So this is the append policy that Mike talked about, which means that if a resource does not have tag, you add that tag. So this is how you do it. So I'm trying to create a storage account here in the last line. If the storage account does not have tag, it will automatically add that tag because of the policy I've defined earlier. So with that, let's open up for questions. Yeah. Oh.
You want to?
Yeah. Sure.
Okay. Do you have any template for this policy?
Yeah, we have a documentation with all the details, what snobs you can use. And we also have a GitHub repository there I can point you to. Yeah. Yeah, right now it only catch futures.
Can you go up to the mic, actually? Sorry about that.
Do you have this right now on the portal, or it has to be done for the PowerShell?
Yeah, right now it's the PowerShell CLI REST API only.
So the question was, is the policy creation supported through any other means like portal? Currently, it's not. It's only the PowerShell CLI. Yep.
So this is a this is really cool. I wasn't expecting to see this at this session. I'm starting to dream up some really complex, amazing policy rules. Do you have any plans to support a better programming language definition than JSON? It seems pretty hard to do.
That's great feedback.
Yeah, that's great feedback. We have heard this before, and then the team is actually considering this, you know, adding maybe with Azure Functions or allowing some. Yeah, but we are considering this.
Yeah, Azure Functions would be really cool. Thanks.
Any other questions? Cool. Thank you guys for being good audience. And hopefully you did not sleep through.
Thank you.